Let's call this meeting of the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:34 PM. It's Monday, April 15, 2024. Before we begin, I want to thank Juliana Singh, the Senate Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Dylan Williams from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Senator Kaufman, Senator Tobin, and myself, Senator Klayman. We have a quorum to conduct business. Senator Giesel and Senator Keel are busy in other committees. Our first order of business today is Senate Bill 20, Appropriation Limit, Governor's Budget, and Senate Joint Resolution 4, Constitutional Amendment, Appropriation Limit, both sponsored by Senator Kaufman. This is the fourth hearing of both these pieces of legislation in the Senate Judiciary Committee and a continuation of our conversation from last Friday. On Friday, the committee adopted new working documents for both SB 20 and SJO 4, and we left off before getting to amendments. So our main goal today is to try to get through all the amendments. I will start the discussion by offering amendment number 1, which is S.1, and also object for purposes of discussion. I would note that the goal of amendment number 1 is to change from using the gross domestic product analysis of the bill and replace that with taking an average of appropriations over the last 5 years from non-state sources, basically excluding federal monies. I'd take the average for the last 5 years from non-state sources, adjust that for inflation and population, and then add 5% on top of that, and that becomes your spending cap, which, of course, the theory on that is it would move forward with time as the state spending increases, and it would put a cap but would give some flexibility if the government felt they needed additional spending. That would give that flexibility without it becoming kind of antiquated because it started with a number that it didn't adjust accurately. So that's the intent of amendment number 1, and happy to take questions. Senator Kaufman?
Yes, sir. To the chair, in proposing this, have you looked at the past modeling that was done? Previous legislature, we had a number of hearings in the Ways and Means Committee, and there were some presentations which they modeled the various types of caps that were then being proposed, this model being one of them. Mm-hmm. And what was notable in that committee hearing, I recall, was people surprised at how much, I'd just say, better the GDP based cap performed. It was more organic. It was not a hard line that tended to just react to an effect that really we have no control over inflation. And so it wasn't really a beneficial linkage. So that important element of the cap was lost by doing so, and it exhibited in some cases some problematic behavior.
Meaning the GDP, you're saying that the GDP approach is responded better to market conditions than does just trying to follow and adjust for inflation.
In the materials through the chair.
Please, I know it's a little weird where I'm sponsoring the amendment.
Maybe I better go sit down there. So.
No, you're totally fine.
In the modeling that's been done on some of the literature that we previously distributed to the committee is available on the website, senatorkaufman.com. We have this information posted in. And just what I refer to as the organic nature of the curves, where it ebbs and flows with the economy. You don't get that ratcheting effect where you get with inflation, where inflation, your inflation is always upon your previous inflation. You have very rare instances of deflation, and those are pretty traumatic events. And so there's a rigidity to the inflation model, and I think the tendency for it to be used was because previously there was not good state-by-state GDP measurements. The proliferation of data and the processing of it's a tool that has become more reliably available. And that's one of the reasons in all the research that we did preparing for this legislation over the years that we've been carrying it, just repeatedly this model behaves in a more realistic fashion. Some of the inflation population-based models tend to just kind of run off into infinity based upon inflation. But then other things, other issues, we can't influence inflation from the state of Alaska very much. We're more just the recipients of it. So the whole concept of a beneficial linkage is broken.
Hmm. Senator Coburn.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Kaufman, I just want to make sure that I'm wrapping my brain around this. Can you please help me understand what other states offer a spending cap and what other states have their state spending cap established as a percent of their GDP?
Through the chair.
There's three of us. When there's somebody, I know we try to follow some formality, but when there are three of us and we're really debating an amendment amongst ourselves, I know we can be a little more relaxed.
It gets a little crazy. So all right. And if I could, I'd like to have my chief of staff, Matthew Harvey, come up and just get himself on the record.
Absolutely.
Just in case we need his help on some of this. And some of the history of the spending cap, he was the one doing a lot of the deep dive work on who does what and the different caps. But state by state, I don't have that accounting. I know Mr. Harvey can go into some of that. And other states have chosen different pieces of inflation, population, personal income. Personal income has been talked about as a potential. But what we see, that's just a subset of the greater set. And so you're just taking a smaller aspect of the measurement. And so state by state, I don't have that, but those are common models that you see. And again, I believe that the lack of having a GDP, a productivity measurement, is because the information was just not aggregated previously. So it's a bit novel, but it's novel because the information is becoming available and it's a much more holistic measurement than personal income. And it's much more encompassing than inflation and population, because that does not measure the productivity, the value production of that population. And inflation is just something that we're the recipients of. We're the, in most cases, passive recipients of it, that we can't do much about it.
So. Mr. Harvey, do you want to add anything to the discussion, please?
For the record, Matthew Harvey, staff to Senator Kaufman. As the senator said, Colorado was probably the most recent tax and expenditure limit, as they're called in a lot of other states, kind of colloquially as a spending cap. That one was personal income, and that was a couple years before the federally driven nationwide improvements to data collection, aggregation, and reporting. That was done by Bureau of Labor Statistics, and that enabled GDP to be a metric. And as the senator was saying, also, if you just kind of stack variables, population and inflation is one of the variables you can go with. And then if you add a productivity factor, you get personal income. And then if you add business investment, net exports, and government expenditures, you arrive at the estimate of GDP. And so it's just, if you want to include business investments and net exports and government expenditures, those are kind of the three factors on top of personal income that you can or make a policy decision to add or not add. And the most recent tax and expenditure limit was personal income, and that was right before the data improvements that were federally driven.
So one of the areas I think I've talked with Senator Kaufman about it, that I think partly as a function of my prior service for the municipality, that I have a certain comfort level with the Anchorage tax cap, which their tax cap is more of a revenue cap than a spending cap, because it limits the money that's available. And I think the spending cap in Anchorage is way high above the tax cap that allocates the revenue. But that's based on what was last year's budget, and then they adjust that upward or downward by inflation and population change. And so to some extent, my thinking on amendment number one was essentially take that idea that's in the Anchorage tax cap, because I like the idea that your spending is tied to, at some level, meaningfully tied to your revenue. And I tend to think how much we spend in a given year here as a state is also very tied to how much revenue is available. And we've certainly seen years ago when we had a lot more revenue, we were spending on lots of things that we don't not even get discussed today because we don't have the revenue. But by instead of just going, what did we do last year, and then adjust that for inflation and population change, this would take a five-year average, going back to the prior 5 years and make that an average. And so part of the appeal to me is with this is that it isn't really just trying to say, here's a number and then adjust for inflation, but you're actually trying to take an average from the past 5 years to kind of have that be a more balanced level. If you had had a bigger year for whatever reason, that would get averaged down by the five-year average. And then you make that adjustment for population inflation, so the number you start with for the current fiscal year recognizes that, and then your cap is 5% above that. So it gives you room to increase spending, but it still keeps it pretty connected to what the reality is that we've been doing as a state government. But I think in some ways my interest in this particular amendment was more than anything else driven by the Anchorage tax cap and then modifying that to give it an average. And that's at least that's been my thinking with it. I think any method has imperfections, and 5 years later we'll learn about all that. If we pass it, we'll start learning about all the things we didn't think about. But that's the thinking that I have on this. Now, what's Senator Kaufman, Senator Tobin, in terms of that as a model?
I can appreciate that. There's issues there. The first, I think, is the lost opportunity, because, again, having a reference to the productive economy, mm-hmm. It serves as a constant reminder to the legislature in doing their budgeting of what we're really referencing is the productive economy's ability to pay for what we want. Of course, supplemented by, federal monies coming in, but that's not free either. That's coming from somewhere. So it anchors us in our consideration of spending to the productive economy and the evolving health of it, and then what we can do. Because if you're referencing something that you have no control over, it's just the recipe for frustration. So that opportunity is one thing. The other issue with the style of a program that Anchorage put in place is that you can get kind of ratcheted down. So if you have an event like we had with COVID, and then federal money comes in, it displaces some revenues because revenues are dampened. And then suddenly you're re-baselined artificially, and so you're locked in. So that's and I believe Anchorage is facing some music on that right now with the difficulty imposed by that. So there's a rigidity that can occur from those type of references, as opposed to the more the fluid dynamics of the economy as it moves along. But very importantly, having that smoothing applied to that, and with that you get that little bit of boost when you need it because of your pivoting across the middle of that. So if the economy pulls back, you've got a couple years of increased ratio of spending that you can do according to it. So it provides that beneficial effect when the economy is down. It pulls back on it when the economy is racing along, and that habit of spending too much at that point. So by keying it, by 5 year averaging it, and referencing the productive economy, it provides a smooth linkage to something that we do, at least indirectly, have some ability to affect.
Right. Senator Tubman, anything you want to
thank you. Thank you. And I will say that I'm starting to quickly get out of my area of expertise, which is not macro, micro economics, but to bring in something I do know, which is public schools. Alaska is an atypical state in which about 65% of our school expenditures comes from the state government. Our state is so large that we do end up having duplication of some administrative services simply because of the areas that we must provide public education. You would not see significant cost savings if you tried to concentrate some of those administrative services. And so much of it comes from state spending. And I worry that when you see a spending cap such as this one tied to GDP, that in times of a reduction in state spending, you will see that cap be placed in such a precarious way that you might end up seeing a reduction in state spending in schools, that there will have to be an over across the board reduction in state spending because of that cap, and that will have a deleterious effect on our public schools, which in many cases, those buildings have to stay operable. They have fixed costs. They have systems that need resources that may require more dollars based on inflation and other pressures that push those needs higher. I think of right now one of the proposals being considered by this body around teacher incentives, because we are now seeing an issue where we're competing on a global market for educators, and we're having to do some additional state spending potentially to attract people to our state to work in our schools. And all of that would be severely impacted if, by looking at that chart of tying it to GDP, where when you have regression areas of GDP, you will see a drop in state spending in schools and stop a drop in state spending in incentive-based pay in some of these areas we might need to attract high-quality professionals to. So that's what's going through my head. It's the lens in which I see much of this, is that much of what is occurring in our public school system is driven by state spending. And if we drastically reduce state spending, we might drastically reduce our ability to provide a high quality public education, which then will drastically reduce the population that stays in Alaska, which will then drastically reduce state spending, and it becomes this death spiral. And that's my big fear when seeing such a cap tied to GDP.
If I may.
Senator Coffin?
But that type of reliability is exactly just, it's on target with the selling points of having a cap such as this. And I would say this cap, the biggest threat that we have to our education system is the reliability of funding, of the reactive way that we budget. We anticipate that there's going to be we're going to have a big year in oil, and so the number goes up, or we have a boom year and the spending goes up along with it. And again, looking at the modeling that we did with Ledge Finance, where we end up with, you know, the years that we're short, and then we're running around with a tin cup looking for, hey, where's the money going to come from? We're cutting. And the entire premise is that we pick a comfortable percentage that we can spend that prevents the peak spending during our best years, rolls that savings forward, and puts it where it's available and keeps us from dipping into it. So the whole trick with what you're saying is to avoid having a percentage that is so tight that it causes that unnecessary constriction. But the percentages that we picked in the modeling that we've done are really designed just to cut the tops off of a boom year. Let's say we do get a gas line and we start to have an immense amount of revenues that start coming in an increase, but as always, a more cyclical nature with commodities. They're priced high, they're priced low. So oftentimes our spending gets set with the high optimistic hopes of the best years, and then it falls short, and then we're surprised and looking. And that's really, that type of reactive budgeting, I feel, has been a big part of what has reduced our resource, workforce development. We spend a lot of money on capital projects, but then we can't afford later on to maintain them because we haven't held back reserves that we can bring out in a metered way to continue doing the work, the maintenance. That starts to eat into our program funding because we're suddenly, you know, again, in the years that we're short and this chart that I'm referring to, where the gold bars are below the line, if we had rolled these tops forward, that would have infilled that. So think of it a bit like filling potholes by having been prevented from overspending during those periods. Now, when we did spend, we spent on good things. We spent on projects and you know, putting money into programs and all of that. But we did so generously that it, and there were no controls really to prevent us from using that money then or at any other time. So it got spent. We built infrastructure that then we couldn't afford to maintain, rather than that slow, steady progress that would be made. So the way the cap is designed is to provide that reliability of funding by avoiding the excess spending. So it seems counterintuitive at first, but a big part of being in the legislature is when you have the 15, 20, 30-minute meetings with the many stakeholders that come through and they're talking about funding. Increasingly, as I'm talking to educators that are looking for funding stability, and I start talking about what a program like this could do to stabilize our state, make us a more high reliability partner for funding our programs and our capital projects, I've seen people start to rethink the premise that any type of control is necessarily bad because it could starve a program. The reality is we use our own self-control and our own spending algorithms in private life to be sure that we can have steady spending year over year through our savings and our financial discipline.
Senator Keel, add anything to this discussion? But not required.
Mr. Chairman, the absence of revenue tied to GDP would be the missing piece of the conversation, but that's not this bill, so I will leave that out for now.
All right. Well, I'm going to withdraw my objection to Amendment Number 1. Do you
object? I object, yes.
So we do have an objection. Is there further discussion about Amendment Number 1? Hearing and seeing none, if you could call the roll on Amendment Number 1.
Senator Kiso is not present. Senator Coughlin?
No.
Senator Keel?
No.
Senator Tobin?
No.
Senator Klayman?
Yes.
1-3.
So by a vote of 1-3, Amendment Number 1 has failed. And I would note, I think Senator Keel joined us about 1:47 or 1:48 p.m. Amendment Number 2, Senator Coughlin, this was an amendment you had requested. Do you want to move Amendment Number 2?
And I can object for purposes.
I'll make the objection, but you should move the amendment.
Oh, yes, okay. Yeah, so I move Amendment Number 2.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Senator Coffman, tell us about Amendment Number 2.
Okay, Number 2 is, let's see, U.3?
It's S.2. This is the cost of managing the permanent fund.
Yes, sir. And, again, that was really made at the request of the fund management. It was just some clerical housekeeping to be sure that as they need to progress, run the business and incur the charges that are necessary to run the fund, and with growth of the fund that they don't somehow get boxed in.
All right. I will withdraw my objection. Oh, Senator Keel, please.
One question, Mr. Chairman, and I apologize. I did run straight down from the budget closeout. Is there already a comparable treatment for investment management fees that the ARM board incurs? Are they would they be getting equal treatment with the Permanent Fund Corp's investment management fees, which I think is the laudable goal of the amendment?
If I may, I'd like to see if Mr. Harvey has.
Mr. Harvey, do you know the answer to that question?
For the record, Matthew Harvey, staff to Senator Coughlin. We don't currently have any exemptions for the Treasury or ARM board investment management fees. The intent of this amendment was as a broader market based investment corporation, as a public corporation, and at the size of the permanent fund corporation's assets under management. For investment management fees, and in the case that the markets are contracyclical to Alaska's performance or something similar to that, but we don't currently have another exemption for other investment management compensation.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I like this amendment. I'll encourage the sponsor to think about whether we might also want to include the Retirement Management Board's investment management fees in a future amendment.
All right, I'm going to withdraw my objection to amendment number two. Is there any further objection to amendment number two? Hearing, seeing none, amendment number two is approved. That brings us to amendment number three, which is number S.3. And I'm going to move amendment number three and object for purposes of discussion. Amendment number three, the discussion we had last week was it was raised the question about whether appropriations to the permanent fund should be excluded or not. And after discussions with legislative legal over the weekend, they walked me through the more detailed analysis. And my interest is actually so that if we're making an appropriation to the permanent fund, that wouldn't count as a spending. We're actually putting it from savings account A to savings account B. And they further advised that the provisions about that's on line 9 and 10 of SB 20 appropriates to a state account or fund that requires a subsequent appropriation from that account or fund as prescribed by law. They noted that the permanent fund itself in the principle really doesn't fit that description because there are no appropriations from the permanent fund. The earnings get appropriated, but the principal is not. And so amendment number three would make it so that dividends would still be included within the spending cap for the calculation, but appropriations that were made to the permanent fund principal would not. So that's the intent of amendment number three, to clarify the discussion we had last week and make it a little and clarify where the bill currently sits. Senator Tobin, did you have a question? Okay, I saw your hand is going about some nice. Any further discussion from members of the committee? Hearing and saying no, I will withdraw my objection to amendment number three. Is there further objection? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number three is approved. That brings us next to amendment number one to the joint resolution, which would be U.1. And I would note that I'll move amendment number one and object for purposes of discussion. And I will note that this is the same discussion we just had, amendment number one to SB 20. It's the same policy. It would basically put in the resolution the same language that's in amendment number one. And because the committee has already voted down amendment number one to SB 20, I've now offered the reasons for amendment number one. I'm going to withdraw amendment number one because I can count heads and know where this is going. So amendment number one is withdrawn. And that would bring us next to amendment number two to SJR 4. And Senator Kaufman, if you'd like to move amendment number two.
I move amendment number two.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion.
And again, the same type of clerical improvement.
I'll withdraw. Well, any other comments? I'll withdraw my objection. Is there further objection? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number two is approved. And Senator Kill, I would note with respect to your comments about the retirement fund investments, I know the next stop for this is the Finance Committee, and I think that'll be a place where you could take that topic up. The next is amendment number three, and this has been offered by Senator Keel, if you'd like to move that amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment three.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this relates to the cap on withdrawals from the CBR in a constitutional budget reserve in a given year. In our conversation in the last committee meeting, the discussion we had about what that does to the minimum savings balance we would need to have on hand to deal with a crash in the resource part of our revenue that happened, or that might happen in the future. And so we're having a bit of a tough time getting the savings balance we need today. The fundamental need we have is to have savings, because we have particularly volatile pieces of our revenue picture. And so I don't know that there's value in a constitutional requirement that those savings be effectively enough for 4 years of resource collapse. And so I would recommend simplifying by removing that limit.
Any discussion as to amendment number 3? Senator Coffin?
Through the chair, just to say that our intent has always been to stimulate, motivate healthy economic considerations. And so we never want to do anything that makes savings difficult and or problematic. So no concerns here.
So he's taking out the critical part about the constitutional budget reserve that seems so clever on the chair's behalf. Any further discussion on amendment number 3? I'm going to maintain my objection. Is there any further discussion on amendment number 3? Hearing none, Madam Clerk, if you would call the roll.
Senator Coffman.
Yes.
Senator Keel.
Yes.
Senator Tobin.
Pass.
Senator Diesel's not present. Back to you, Senator Tobin.
Yes.
Senator Klayman.
No.
3-1.
So by a vote of 3-1, amendment number 3 has passed the committee. That brings us last to amendment number 4. I'll move amendment number 4, and which is U.4, and object for purposes of discussion. And just note that this is the SJR4 equivalent of amendment number 3 to SB20, which would allow appropriations to the permanent fund to not be counted, but we would still count dividends. Is there any further questions or comments on amendment number 4? I will withdraw my objection to amendment number 4. Is there further objection? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number 4 is approved. That's all of the amendments we have, and that brings us to the end of our discussion on this. I will, Senator Coffman, any closing remarks?
I just want to say thank you, through the chair to all. Thank you so much for hearing this bill, for considering it, and for thinking about the various amendments and the discussion around it. I think it's a valuable part of this legislation is having these conversations. So I really appreciate it.
Any other comments from anybody else on the committee? Hearing and seeing none, Senator Keel, could I have a motion first for Senate Bill 20?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Senate Judiciary Committee report CS for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 20, Judiciary version 33LS0206/S, as in Skagway, as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Hearing no objection, the bill moves from committee. I would note that the next stop is finance, and they'll dig harder than we've been digging, I predict. And that next step is Senate Joint Resolution 4. Could I have a motion for that one?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Senate Judiciary Committee report CS for sponsor substitute for Senate Joint Resolution number 4, Judiciary, version 33LS0205/U, as in Unalaska, as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Hearing no objection, Senate Bill or SJR4 moves from committee. We will have, in the end, 3 sets of documents to sign, so be sure you sign those before you leave. Our last order of business today is Senate Bill 165, Defense of Public Officer Ethics Complaint, sponsored by my office. We did not receive any amendments by the deadline. Any other questions from the committee? Hearing and seeing none, Senator Keough, could I have a motion?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Judiciary Committee report Senate Bill 165, work order 33LS1029/B, as in Bethel, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Hearing no objection, Senate Bill 165 moves to committee. Please stay behind after the adjournment to sign all 3 folders with paperwork. We will stand adjourned for the day. Our next meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, April 17 at 1:30 p.m. We will stand adjourned now. The time is 2:03. 9 p.m.